Accession number 19912, Reel 1.
Mr. Weinberg, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Germany, in Westphalia, in a little industrial town by name of Herford.
Which year was this?
That was in 1919, on the 6th of March.
Can you tell me something about your family background, please?
My father was an industrial. We had altogether about 1,500 employees and were worldwide known as Weinberg Rutli Chocolate. We exported after the First World War to China, South America, and to Australia. Unfortunately, my father had the idea to bring up another factory in Hamburg and gave the direction of that factory to a cousin of his who ruined the factory. Therefore, he had to start all over again, but it didn't work out, so my mother took over and became a textile sales representative of textile fashions. I went, when I was 10, to what we in Germany call the Gymnasium, and went up there until the 30s, until 32, when on the day Hitler took over, my so-called friends, when I came to the school, attacked me, and I had to be interned into the hospital for about 3 weeks.
What did they do to you?
They came in mass on me and hit me and did everything they could to just call me dirty Jew and so on and so on. And what was the worst of it, that it were young boys who until then I had thought they were my friends, because on my birthdays they were invited to my home and had coffee and cake in my home. Only two of them, which I after the war met again, had the, let us say, the goodwill not to participate. Unfortunately also, some of the teachers stood by and didn't do a thing. But the headmaster, when he came and saw what was going on, he immediately stopped the whole thing. And he then called my father and said it would perhaps be better when the boy would not continue to come to this school. I was 14 years by then, and my mother decided to let me learn something practical. So I went to a in Herford to first. I went to shopping center, which was in hand of a Jewish proprietor. But I had also, by law, then to go what we call, in what they called in Germany, Handelsschule, where everybody had to go who learned something practical. In that school, there was unfortunately all the teachers, all of them, were big Nazis. And my class teacher was a member of the SS. And for him to have a Jewish boy in the class together with another Jewish boy, we were two, was absolutely impossible. So he did everything to provoke us. And one day I lost my temper. And when he said to my my other comrade, Jewish comrade, you see, that is the kind the Jewish are looking. And so I went out, imitated Goebbels, and said, you see, that is the way an Aryan goes. You can imagine the row which started, and my father was arrested, I was arrested, but they let us go immediately after that. And then my parents decided to send me to a factory in the south of Germany, in Stuttgart. And that was already in 1935, after the so-called Nuremberger Gesetze, the laws of Nuremberg, which allowed to hit and do anything on the street with a Jew, what everybody wanted to do.
Can we know the names of the Gymnasium and the Handelsschule?
The Friedrichs Gymnasium in Herford. And the Handelsschule had not a, was a Handelsschule in Herford. That was not a, only one. There was only one. And the teacher was called, the name of the teacher was Hasheider. After the war, we tried to find him and to get him to the court. But he disappeared, and I don't know what happened to this man. I can't tell you what. Unfortunately, naturally, as all in Germany, these boys, they went to into the army during the war, and one of the boys, just one of the boys, who until the last minute was with me and never was influenced by the others, he was killed in Russia. So far, in Germany, in 1935, as I told you, I was going to Stuttgart. My mother insisted on a, there was a Jewish textile factory, Gebrüder Rothschild, and I went there to learn textile machinery. The owner, before he immigrated to Palestine, now Israel, told my mother that if it would be possible, I should go to the technical high school still to make my engineer on textile machinery. This actually did happen, because until the 1st of January 1938, all children of former Jewish soldiers of the 1914-18 war were allowed to do so. So I went still to Reutlingen, to the textile school, and did make my textile engineer. But I could not practice anymore in 30, I went out in 30, yeah, in 37, end of 37, and I could not practice anymore in Germany. So I went to Holland, and as a student still, and worked in a textile factory, when unfortunately I was lodged together with a student from Burma. And this student had a tropical illness, which he did transfer to me. The owner of the factory decided to send me back to Germany, which was a big mistake, but I couldn't do anything because I was without conscience at that moment. So they packed me into a Red Cross ambulance, crossed the border with me, and interned me in the Jewish hospital in Köln.
Whereabouts in the Netherlands had you been?
Nijmegen. The factory was between Gennep and Nijmegen. And my father immediately called from Hamburg, from the Jewish hospital in Hamburg, a professor who was up to these illnesses, and this professor saved my life. I went after a month being in the hospital, naturally back to my home at Herford, and 3 days later, a Gestapo officer came to see my father and told him, "Your boy has to go tonight because tomorrow the Gestapo will come and arrest him, and you will never see him again, because he was put as an immigrant already, but he came back, which he should not do." This Gestapo man did this because after the First World War, he was a policeman, and my father helped him to survive with his family, and he never had forgotten that, and that is why he came to warn my father. So we went the same night. My mother picked everything she could, and my father did get a taxi, and we drove from Herford to Hamburg in a taxi, which is about at least 250 miles. Once arriving there, we went to the Uruguayan embassy, and we knew, my father and my mother also, the whole family knew about that, that it was possible to get a visa by paying to the general consul a certain amount of money. This consul general was called Rivas. He later on was arrested by the, was called back to Uruguay, was arrested and put into jail because of his corruption. But that was years later, and I have only heard about that. I never could confirm that that is true, but I hear that that has happened to him. Anyway, he wanted 2,000 gold mark, which fortunately my father could do. And part of it, the most fantastic part of it, was that part of this money did go to the Gestapo chief of Hamburg. I had to go to the Gestapo chief of Hamburg, who gave me a document wherein it was written that I could come back to Germany anytime I wished to. And when he handed that over to me, I never forget, he said, if you ever made use of this, we immediately put you against the wall and shoot you. Because that was a thing between the consul general and him, because Uruguay at that moment only gave visas to people where they had the document that these people could go back whenever they wished to go back to their original country. It was something really terrible. When I came next morning to the boat, Cap Norte, it was of this Hamburg South American line, there stood, was a long table where all the immigrants had to pass, open the luggage, and had to be controlled. The Gestapo chef in Hamburg had told me, when you come to the boat, you go and see Mr. So-and-so. I don't remember the name anymore. And so I did. So he asked my passport, looked into the passport, and said, "Oh, Mr. Meyer, you go on board immediately." So even this man was in the 2000 gold mark, because otherwise he would never have done it. It was a thing which later on we knew that in the Gestapo there was a corruption you can't imagine. And so I got on board of the Cap Norte on the, if I'm not mistaken, it was on the last day of September 38, when the Czechoslovakian crisis was going on. And we were afraid, actually, that the ship couldn't get out because of the crisis with Czechoslovakia. But as you know, they marched into the Sudetenland first, and the ship did go and left. I arrived in Montevideo, Uruguay, on the 19th of October, 38, and there was a wonderful organization of the Jewish committee who looked after us. I didn't speak one word of Spanish by then, but yes, about si and señor and señorita or señora. But never mind, we immediately were put into Jewish families in Montevideo. And on 2 days later, I was told to go to the bank of, it was called the Israeli Bank. Even then, already, it was called the Israeli Bank. There was a gentleman who were looking after young people to get work for them. And when I told him that I was on the paper, so that I had my papers as a textile engineer, he said, "You don't have to be worried. I will get you into to work in no time." So, because Uruguay had a very big textile industry, and really, after 3 days only, I was in a little factory working, and that helped naturally very much. But I had the other very big chance to have family already in England since many, many years. And my aunt, my great aunt, the sister of my grandmother, sent me £20, which in 38 was a terrific lot of money, and I could live on it at least 1 month. On the 9th of November, 1938, a telegram came from my mother that my father was arrested with all the others in the Kristallnacht and was put into Buchenwald. Please do something that we can get him out, because I have been told if I can have a visa for him, they will let him out and he can go immediately. So I went to an uncle I had in Uruguay and asked him if he would be kind enough to put this money on the National Bank of Uruguay, and which he did. And the bank sent a telegram to my mother that they had have the money. That was done because they could then say to the government, he was not, when he came, ballast to them. He was freed with the condition to leave Germany in 48 hours. So my mother and my father left for Montevideo and arrived in January 39. On the 13th December 39, early in the morning, my father came down where we lived and said, "I think I hear gun firing. I hope that we haven't got the war in South America also now." And at that moment, the sirens from the newspapers went on, and we dressed and ran to the next newspaper where they had always outside big announcement what happened in the world. And it said at 6:15 a German battleship opened fire against the British South Atlantic fleet. I did not know in that moment that it was, for me, the moment which changed my life. The Battle of the so-called Rio de la Plata took about 14 hours. The Exeter, under the command of Parry, was badly damaged and had to go back to the Falklands. The fleet was at this moment under Commodore Harwood. And Harwood then decided to go on in the battle against the Graf Spee, who already also was hit. But what he did not know, Harwood, was that he was quite badly hit already. So in a certain moment, when two more direct hits from the Achilles, actually, did go through the commander bridge and wounded the second time, the captain of Graf Spee, Langsdorff, he fainted for 10 minutes. And I know that because if you, as you will find out later on why I know about this. And the Captain K, who was at the same rank he had and was his second in command of the Graf Spee, was before a captain of a merchant ship who was going Hamburg to Montevideo and Buenos Aires, and he knew the waters completely and everything there. What he didn't know was that Uruguay was a pro-Allied country, and not as Buenos Aires, as Argentine, a pro-German country. So he did make the biggest mistake to go into, he broke the battle and went into the port of Montevideo after he had shot twice more against the Achilles without making any hit. He arrived at 10 minutes to 1 in the morning of the 14th in the port and asked for asyl for repairing his damages. At 3 o'clock in the morning, the bell rings at my home, and I went down, and I found myself in front of the driver of the British Embassy. The driver said, "Sir Millington Drake would like to see you immediately." I was flabbergasted. I knew that as well as the British ambassador, as also the French ambassador, Leroux, knew that I had volunteered immediately after the breakout of the war to join or the French or the British army. So I went to with the driver to the embassy, was put into a beautiful little saloon, and was offered a whiskey with water, because I didn't want to drink a pure whiskey. After a while, Sir Millington Drake came, and we were all by ourselves. During 1 hour, he talked to me. First, he asked me, "Would you still help us against the German Nazis?" And he said, not the German, he said the German Nazis. I said to him, "Naturally I would. How can I help?" And then he explained to me that he wanted me to become, after I left the embassy, a big German Nazi to introduce myself to the sailors and who came ashore and talk to them by telling him a lot of lies so that they would get scared. He told me also that there were 3 other German Jewish boys who he also had already talked to and had accepted to do the same, but he said, "Nobody of you will ever know who are